If you don't know about flyer deals on Instacart, this message is for you. Flyer deals are like strolling through your favorite store looking for deals, but you're scrolling your phone and maybe you're in bed because getting delivery doesn't mean you have to miss deals like you'd get at the store. Like the one creamer that doesn't make your stomach hurt or the pasta sauce you can't not buy when it's on sale. So download the Instacart app, shop flyers, and never miss a deal on one of your favorites. Plus, get delivery in as fast as 30 minutes. Avoiding your unfinished home projects because you're not sure where to start? Thumbtack knows homes, so you don't have to. Don't know the difference between matte paint finish and satin? Or what that clunking sound from your dryer is? With Thumbtack, you don't have to be a home pro. You just have to hire one. You can hire top-rated pros, see price estimates, and read reviews, all on the app. Download today.
If you're ready for a new job, let Express Employment Professionals help you. Express is already hiring for summer jobs in a variety of industries. Job seekers never pay a fee at Express. Go to expresspros.com to find your location. That's expresspros.com.
Whatever it is that you want to save forever, display, hand down your, like, it turns things, it takes memories and enshrines them forever. The Frame Corner can do that for you. It's what they specialize in, and they've been doing it for 50 years. 5035 Park Avenue, framecornermemphis.com. We're late to get to Chris Harrington. We'll do that next. Then Sam Hardiman. Busy day on the Jeff Calkins Show, 92.9 FM ESPN. All right, back on the Jeff Calkins Show. Let's do this Chris Harrington deal. Chris joins me now. Chris, what are we listening to?
Little Motown in the morning. Marvin Gaye and Tammy Terrell. Ain't No Mountain High Enough. A little Detroit music in honor of the Detroit Pistons winning last night.
Yeah, that was fun. We'll talk about the we haven't talked much about the other series, but before I do that, we did have the Rookie of the Year voting. Stephon Castle wins. I think last year, you look back to the draft, we both liked Stephon Castle and didn't like the idea of him going to the Spurs, honestly.
My number one guy in the draft, yeah.
We also liked Reed Sheppard, and he hasn't done much.
He was my number two guy in the draft, yeah.
It's funny, though. I get the sense that when people vote for Rookie of the Year, they vote based on who had the best rookie year, but also 5 years from now, who's going to look like they should have won Rookie of the Year? There's a little bit of forecasting as well as what we just saw. Doesn't that also, he had a great second half of the year, certainly. Doesn't that also help explain why Stephon Castle might be a more worthy winner than Jalen Wells, for example?
Well, at higher scoring average. I think it's even more so people look at that, right? Still, like, you know, who scored the most points? He averaged 15 and this guy averaged 12, and it's as much that. And then I think that's compounded by where they were taken in the draft. I mean, in some years it hasn't been. I mean, the year that Malcolm Brogdon won over Joel Embiid, the counter argument was like, what do you want this to look like in 5 years? You know, right. I mean, and Embiid did not win out because he didn't only played 30 something games. So it actually went the other way that year in the second round pick. Brogdon won. I think it's a combination of, I think Wells is just not a very exciting player. And so, like, it's not like he had some huge, strong case. I mean, you could make a case for him.
Yeah.
And so, in the absence of a strong case, like the guy who averaged more points and was a higher draft pick, I thought, to me, and the fact that Castle won so overwhelmingly just showed you sort of a little bit of the herd mentality that happens around these votes. But to me, Castle, Richey finished second, Wells who finished third, and then EDU finished fifth. There was a case to be made for all four of those, and I would have been fine with any of those four winning. I think not only was Edie better than Alex Saar, I think there were like two or three other, like almost everyone else who got votes was better than Alex Saar last year to me. But, you know, he had a better scoring average because he played on this lousy team, and so there you go.
If you voted, who would you have voted for?
At the time I wrote it, and that was a couple weeks out, so if I would have gone back to it, maybe that would have changed. But I had Wells, I can't remember, but I had those four. I think I had Wells one. The case for Wells was he started the most games of any rookie, and he did so on a playoff team playing an important role on a playoff team where he's guarding the best player on the other team on the perimeter every single night. You also, when you looked at some of the advanced stat stuff and the best like publicly available advanced stat is estimated plus minus, he was number one among rookies in that too. Right. So he's like the rookie who started the most and played an important role in a good team. And by that measure, he was also the most productive all around. And so I think that was the case for Wells. I don't have a lot of quarrel with Castle though.
Do you think the totally alternate universe, if Isolo had been the head coach all year long, would Zach Edey have been the Rookie of the Year?
Yes, I think probably so. I mean, he did miss time in the middle of the year, But yeah, if he had just been in the starting lineup all year, he would have been in the starting lineup all year. Right. I think when he played, and then his numbers would have been a little bit better. He actually didn't score a lot under Eastlow, and he in one of his media day comments, or not media day, final media session comments, he actually talked about that. But his rebounding numbers would have been big. He would have started all year on a good team, and yeah, I think he probably would have won.
On the scoring, what did he say? Because what was interesting to me is that I assumed coming in, the one thing I was most confident of about Edie coming in this year was he would be hard to stop. Like he'd clean up around the, like he'd,
right.
and he struggled with that. It seemed to be tentative around the rim. What did he say about scoring either under Isolo or generally about what he needs to work on?
I don't remember the exact quote, but he talked about playing better down the stretch, even though he wasn't scoring after the OG change. And talking about the screening, the rebounding, the impact on the game, you know, that I do stuff that impacts team success that doesn't always show up in the box score. Some of the same stuff Isolo said along the way. I do think that's true, that Isolo leaned into minutes for Edie, into that screening, rebounding, physical presence role. He did not go out of his way to like throw the ball to the big guy. That was not like really part of the plan. And I think his scoring's probably going to jump next season. He needs to develop a little bit more chemistry in terms of, you know, that pick and roll, the roll part of the pick and roll, and finishing some of those lobs. Just get a little bit more comfortable with the physicality and the size and the speed of the people around him.
I mean, Ja would go out of his way to throw the ball to the big guy, like
sometimes it wouldn't connect.
Yeah, 100%.
This is sort of what they have to sort of get better at.
In terms of Wells again, one of the interesting things. I mean, obviously, what an unbelievably great draft pick. In a bad draft to get him in the second round is a hell of a hit. It was interesting because one of the things that Kleiman said was we didn't get unintentionally young. He just came in and he won the job. That's a little disingenuous.
Well, it's a commentary on who
he
was
beat
competing.
Out. That's yeah, is the guy that he wanted to win the job wasn't any good, right?
Wasn't available. Marcus Martin and then Vince Williams both. I think Wells had a really good rookie year, and maybe he keeps that starting job for 10 years.
Right.
Wouldn't surprise me if he's not starting next season. Maybe Vince Williams takes a step forward. Maybe they acquire someone else in the summer. I've been a little bit more in the middle on Wells relative to like the fan base excitement around him. He is not much of an athlete. He's just not. He's got good size. He's not an explosive athlete. He plays with a lot of composure. He follows the game plan defensively. He plays with a lot of maturity. The 3-point shooting was good overall in the season. It like waxed and waned, or you know, as 3-point shooting tends to, and it was sort of struggled late. I mean, my goal would be, we get to the thing yesterday about like, you know, we're not a gritty veteran wing away or whatever, but like one of my goals, if I'm bringing bringing Bane, Morant, and Jackson back, is to find, you know, some perimeter player who I think would basically slot above Jalen Wells and Vince Williams, and like, you know, if they beat him out, fine, but that's not really my plan.
Push him into the rotation, but not necessarily as the starter. This is maybe a little silly, but in a redraft, do you think Zach Edey would still go around 9? Very clearly, Jalen Wells would go somewhere in the first round now, but like, these guys are such like...
Yeah, I don't know. I don't have it all in front of me. I don't think it's at all certain Edie would go higher. And in fact, he might even go lower because you look at guys, you're still betting long term on guys.
Right.
Like Matis Bozelas looks like a really interesting long term prospect.
Right.
I think there are plenty of teams who would take Kalel Ware over Edie.
Yep.
I think there are plenty of teams who would take Jared McCain over Edie. I think there may be some teams who would take Misi over Edie. I think that would be more debatable. But there may be some teams who would do that given his athleticism. And then in terms of who went above,
and then there's other guys. Ryan Dunn was pretty good, wasn't he? Like Ryan,
I mean,
his limitations offensively. I mean,
there are some teams who would just say
Kyle Filipowski was good. Sorry,
there are some teams who would just say we don't want Zach Edey stylistically. Right. So there's that. But I don't know if there's anyone taken above Edey who would necessarily go lower because they've been bad, you're still betting on the potential. Like I don't know if Edey goes ahead of Reed Sheppard in a redraft still. I think people who believed in Reed Sheppard aren't yet ready to give up on Reed Sheppard. You know, Dillingham was sort of an interesting question, and the Salon guy from Charlotte who felt like a reach at the time.
Yeah,
I'm guessing Edie goes ahead of him, so it's a mixed bag. But Edie still be a lottery pick.
Ron Holland would still go ahead of him, presumably because of the gift.
I think it depends on the team, but
All right, you mentioned the the game last night. Pistons win. That's great. Before we get to that one, Milwaukee is gone. Milwaukee's done. We had that ridiculous
in multiple ways.
Right. But yes, they're done for the year, but they're done because they're just in a disastrous situation where they have
Giannis and nothing else.
They have Giannis and nothing else. They're the guys beyond Giannis who have the biggest contracts are Lillard, who's
tore his Achilles.
Who tore his Achilles and is going to be owed $50 million each of the next 2 years, and then Kyle Kuzma, who stinks, right? It was not good. They got no draft picks. Basically,
they got no young players who look like they're about to become something. It's a bad, bad, bad spot.
Lopez and Porter are both free agents.
Portis has like a player option. We'll see what he does with that.
What do you do?
That's part. I think you have a hard conversation with Giannis. It's Giannis means so much that it's sort of partly up to him. I mean, it's like the Dirk situation. Do you want to be Dirk? Or do you want to move on? Most guys don't end up not being Dirk. I mean, Dirk Nowitzki, who stayed in Dallas, won one title, just like Giannis, right. And then that team sort of fell apart earlier than maybe it needed to, or it should, or it had to, but it did, and could never quite get back on track to be a real meaningful team with him, and he just wrote it out and retired in Dallas. So does Giannis
were they this hopeless at the end? I don't know,
but they didn't win anything. That's for sure. Yeah. This Milwaukee's been in the playoffs, not winning anything, and so it's the same kind of thing. And so Giannis is younger at this point. Whatever point it was that the Dallas thing turned the corner and wasn't going to turn back in time, Dirk was older than Giannis is now, at least a little bit, I think. And so does Giannis want to ride this out and just be, Mr. Milwaukee, and we'll see where we go with it, or is he want to say, okay, this has run its course, and I can move on to something better. You can recoup a lot of stuff for me that could restart your rebuilding path. If you're just thinking in cold hard terms of what's best for the basketball, it would be a trade of Giannis this summer for both sides. But maybe both sides want to stay together.
In terms of deals, people then start throwing together teams. If you were Houston, would you offer Amen Thompson in a package for Giannis?
I mean, that's the last guy I want to move, obviously, which makes it the first guy Milwaukee wants to get. If I felt like I came out of the trade with a team that can win a title, then yes, I do. I still wonder about, is Jalen Green, Fred VanVleet, Reed Shepard. You need someone. There's a reason Milwaukee went out to get Damian Lillard, right? You need someone who can handle and shoot and score on to go with Giannis on the perimeter to be a team that thinks you can win a title. And so that's sort of my question there. I'm definitely interested in trading for Giannis if I'm Houston. And they have so much stuff that you could you could put together some good offers that
don't include him. Is that sort of the most obvious? I mean, there's a lot of places that people have mentioned.
How bold does Oklahoma City want to be?
Isn't it part of it, though, that, and maybe someone will see, what happens in this playoffs might tell the tale.
How about Jalen Williams and Chet?
Right, yes.
And some draft picks.
Right, yeah.
And then, what do you do if Oklahoma City? Well, you got Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, Giannis Antetokounmpo, and Isaiah Hartenstein, and Alex Caruso,
Some of it is, though, maybe it's not true. I imagine some of it will be framed by what happens. If you're Oklahoma City and you win the title here, you feel different. And Houston's flaws, which you've seen all year long, are now being exposed. Not that anyone couldn't use
it. It was funny.
They have a hard time scoring.
There was a media day thing. I can't remember how it was phrased. Someone said something like, teams like so-and-so in Houston that's like jumped ahead of you guys or whatever. Or that's not how they phrase it, A team that's taking the big leap or whatever. Or
young teams
something
that are past you.
Yeah, said something like that. And Josh said, Houston, what have they done? And the guy said, well, they're the second seed. So I've been the second seed.
Did he say that?
He did. And he's right. It's like, what's the difference?
To that point, by the way, I've been getting grief because I've heard that same formulation, that Memphis has been surpassed by all these young teams. And they very clearly have been surpassed by Oklahoma City. But I said, they're in the same tier as Minnesota, and they're in the same tier as Houston, and they're in the same. Do you believe that to be true? I got pushback about the Minnesota one in particular.
I do believe that to be true. And in fact, in some ways, if you write it out, and part of the writing it out is the guy, everyone's still believing in it, the players too.
Yeah.
Like, Again, all these dudes are younger than Zach Randolph was when he showed up in Memphis, right? Rudy Gobert is not, you know, and the Houston thing is like they got a lot of defensive talent, but they don't have Ja, you know, they just don't have the guy who can take over, you know, a game on an offensive possession like that. And like, I don't know. Now Minnesota has that guy in a big way at Anthony Edwards, but again, like Julius Randle, maybe there for a good time, not a long time. Rudy Gobert maybe turning the corner. I think those teams were moderately to significantly, depending on how you look at it, better than the Grizzlies this season, but within the same tier. And I think that movement could flip over easily next season.
And you look at the other teams that were. I mean, well, obviously Oklahoma City's in a different tier, but like the Clippers have an old dude in Kawhi
and James Harden.
Thanks for your typical playoff effort last night, James Harden. The Lakers have an old dude in LeBron.
Really old dude.
Old dude. The Warriors have old dudes.
Old dudes.
Minnesota, as you point out, it's got a couple of old dudes, and it's this young team.
Right.
Like, it is this assumption that Memphis has been forever lapped by these teams.
This is why I am just not team blow it up on the Grizzlies. I'm just not.
Okay. Back to the honest thing, though. Other candidates... And we have all summer to discuss. Miami, of course, wants him for Tyler Herro, Duncan Robinson, and want every star.
Miami finds a way to get involved. Of course, that didn't mean they get it. I mean, they didn't get Damian Lillard done.
San Antonio for Castle and picks. Toronto for Scottie Barnes and picks. Brooklyn for picks. Like any of these strikers.
Brooklyn's got the cap space. They have the picks. And so I think Houston, Brooklyn, Oklahoma City, Miami, I do think those are the right teams to identify. Toronto is interesting because, you know, Giannis is an international guy. I mean, it feels like Toronto as a market like would fit with him maybe in a way that some other stars it wouldn't fit with. I think as bad as that team's been, there's enough there that, like, you know, and Giannis is good enough. And, you know, does he have a relationship with Masai? Maybe, maybe not. I don't know. Is there some connection there? Right. The Toronto thing is an interesting wild card.
Does Brooklyn have anything besides picks and cap space? Like, what else do they put with him?
No, I mean, you know, you got Cam Johnson, you got Nick Claxton, whatever, but it's mostly like, you know,
flexibility to build around Giannis if you were to get Giannis. So are you all in on Detroit here? They blow the 20.1 point lead in game one, then they get jobbed in another game on the call, and here they are. They win last night.
I'm certainly rooting for Detroit, and I certainly think that Knicks, and I thought going in that Knicks team is sort of not as good as they wanted to be. So I think that Knicks team is beatable. Very much so. I still think the Knicks probably win that series, but like Knicks were my pick to win the series before it started. I just didn't think Detroit was ready for this yet, but like, you know, this is good stuff from them.
Rockets, Warriors, and T-Wolves, Lakers tonight. Thoughts on those two series?
Again, I on the show, I believe I picked the underdogs in all the West series except for Memphis, Oklahoma City. Feeling generally pretty good about that. The Denver thing's a little more interesting. I just don't think Houston's not ready for this yet.
Right.
Not in a dissimilar way from, like, it really is, you know, the Grizzlies team lost to the Warriors in the second round. They actually won. They won their 2-7 against Minnesota, but it was against Minnesota, not Golden State. Then you lose to a Steph Curry Golden State team. It's not dissimilar from what Memphis went through a couple years ago. I certainly like Golden State in that series, and I just don't think the Lakers team is that good. They got the two stars, but I just don't think the team's that good. And so I like Minnesota there, as I did from the jump.
You had your piece about what's happening in Memphis film up today, which I want to get to in a moment. But a couple of weeks ago, you talked to us about Sinners, and you have since seen it. What'd you think?
Yeah, I think Sinners is great. And it's, I think it's still showing on the IMAX screen at Paradiso at least another day or two. And then I think it's going to move off. I highly recommend trying to see it on that screen. I think the best quality image and sound you can get for that movie is really going to enhance it more so than most movies. So I highly recommend that. I don't think anywhere in Memphis is showing it on a film print rather than digital, unfortunately, and I think that would particularly be good. But the thing about Sinners that I love is it takes a long time before it gets to the genre elements, meaning the horror vampire genre elements. So there's a lot of setup. You're setting up characters. You're setting up a world. Then you bring them together in this place, and then like the action happens. So the setup is great, and so that when you get to the action, you know the place, you care about the people, you understand the relationships, and that makes the action better. But the setup is the best thing about the movie on its own terms, not just for how it works for the action. And this is a movie that has a deep, deep interest in the Mississippi Delta Southern culture of the 1930s. This is a world of African and Irish, Choctaw and Chinese. It's deep into food, into music, into language, into the way people talk, the way people act. And my favorite character in the whole movie is the character Grace Chow. She and her husband Bo are merchants in Clarksdale, a Chinese couple who run the store. And when this woman talks, she sounds like Howlin' Wolf. That deep right. Husky Southern accent, and just her demeanor and the whole thing. I just think the level of care and interest that this movie took in terms of production design, in terms of music, in terms of everything, in terms of really caring deeply about the deep culture of the South is really impressive.
And why were the Irish and the Chinese here? I also, by the way, there were...
Because it's American. People come from all over.
Right? Like, yeah, I know.
It's
yeah,
this fiction we have, that we gather from movies, that it's the only reason we're surprised by that, you know? That the South was not like
I see. Right. Yes. Know? No, but they were here as particularly as Merkin. Like, there's a lot... Isn't there a rich tradition of Jewish folks in Mississippi, too,
yeah.
right? Like,
yeah,
who
yeah.
have been, you know...
One of my favorite film critics, Jonathan Rosenbaum, who wrote for the Chicago Reader for a long time, he grew up in Alabama, and he grew up in a family of people who own movie theaters. In fact, you know, the Malco movie theater is owned by a Jewish family.
Yeah.
But Jonathan Rosenbaum grew up in, like, Alabama, like, smaller towns in Alabama, and he grew up in this family that were theater exhibitors, and they owned, like, movie theaters in small towns all over Alabama. And he has a book, sort of a memoir, where he writes, right, growing up in this family, this Southern Jewish family that was in the movie business. So, yeah, yeah. And that's here in Memphis, too.
Okay, this week we've got... what's the superhero film that's coming out this
Thunderbolts. Marvel's trying again. Marvel is they're bobbing in the water, they're drowning a little bit, they're trying to gulp for air, and this one's supposed to be pretty good from what I've heard.
And then two other things. Rust, that's the movie where there was the fatality, right?
That's the movie. More people will have read about this movie than will ever see it probably. I have no idea whether it's going to be any good. But it's the movie where on production a few years ago, it's a Western, and a prop gun somehow had real bullets in it and accidentally discharged and killed the cinematographer. Alec Baldwin discharged the gun.
Is there any early reviews or
no? It's one of these things where, like, we spent all this money on the movie, we got to put it in theaters, so here we are.
Okay, and then it's the 50th anniversary of Monty Python.
Monty Python and the Holy Grail.
The Holy Grail,
specifically that movie. Were you a big Monty Python guy?
No, I wasn't cool enough to be. Sorry.
Okay, I was either not cool enough or too cool. I'm not sure which. I don't know where Monty Python fits on that scale.
We were just not,
because I was not like a Doctor Who guy either, or any of that kind of British nerd culture, you know.
And when I felt like I didn't watch SNL, I didn't really wasn't. It wasn't that we were allowed to. We just didn't do a lot of the. I didn't watch a lot of TV. I didn't go to a lot of movies. I didn't like. I was. Right. It's just not what we did. We showed Sheep and Red.
Right.
That's what we did. And so, but anyway, 50 years ago. So I would have been. Yeah, right. I would have been 13. I would have been
1975.
Great. Would have been a great. Yeah, 14. It would have been a great time for me to. It's showing somewhere big screen.
It's showing a few different theaters on a couple different days, and it's a 50th anniversary screening. And I like this trend we have now. To getting older movies back into the mainstream movie theaters, I endorse that.
You weren't a big at the time.
I haven't spent a lot of time with Monty Python. No. The Terry Gilliam stuff he's done after that, like Brazil and some of those movies, I probably know a little bit better.
Thank you, Chris. Appreciate it.
Thanks.
All right, we got Sam Hardiman coming up next. Before then, I'll tell you, if you're looking for a new financial institution, Leaders Credit Union would be the place to go. It's because we're at St. Clair. When she was suggested, she open an account there. She then suggested, she liked it so much, she suggested her son Conroy open an account there. It's a credit union, and so they put every dollar back into better rates, better technology, better service. They're just terrific folks. They got one a branch in Bartlett, and another brand new branch in Arlington. But honestly, you just download the app or check it out at leaderscu.com. We got Sam Hardiman coming up next. Jeff Calkinshire, 92.9 FM.
Going up. Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
Question for our listeners. Which automaker assembles the most vehicles in the country? Here's a hint. It's the same one that employs the most hourly workers in the country, and the answer is Ford. That's not a coincidence. It's a commitment. A commitment your local Ford stores share. And that is why Ford is now offering employee pricing across their full lineup of vehicles, which means you pay what they pay. So visit your local Ford stores today to take advantage of this great opportunity. Ford Motor Company. From America for America.
Hey everyone, summer is just around the corner and May's packed with reasons to celebrate. Whether you're firing up the grill for a backyard barbecue, soaking up the sun by the pool, or enjoying a long weekend with friends and family, Whole Foods Market makes it easy to kick off the season with great everyday prices on high quality favorites, from fresh produce to grilling essentials. Let's dive into the savings and get your summer fun started right. Personally, I love how easy Whole Foods Market makes it to pull together a last-minute gathering. I was there recently picking up a few things for a cookout, and those yellow low-price signs are no joke. I grabbed their No Antibiotics Ever Ground Turkey and a few 365 by Whole Foods Market Organic Salad Kits. Honestly, so convenient and surprisingly affordable. The quality is still everything you'd expect, but I definitely felt like I was scoring a deal, which I love. Plus those yellow sale signs, I make a beeline for them now. Especially when I saw strawberries on sale, we went through two cartons in one day. Save on May celebrations with great everyday prices at Whole Foods Market.
It's no surprise that facial hair is personal. It grows from your face. Whether you're going smooth shaven or maintaining a beard, Dollar Shave Club offers shave and grooming products that are always high quality, but never overpriced. Visit DollarShaveClub.com and use promo code SHAVEUP for 20% off $20 or more.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
I'm ESPN. All right, back on the Jeff Calkins Show. Joined now by Sam Hardiman. Sam Hardiman writes for the Daily Memphian, covers the city for the Daily Memphian. He also happens to be a Patriots fan. Hey, Sam, how are you?
I'm well, Jeff. How are you?
Good. I wanted to play you something. Is this okay here? I'm going to play you. Do we have this audio, George? I'm going to play you some audio. It's from the recent interview that Bill Belichick did. It was CBS, I think. It was a CBS morning show.
It was CBS, yeah.
Yeah, thank you. I think it was a CBS morning show. And just a little snippet of this. I want to know what you think. Here we go. Sam, in the middle of the interview, she says, "We're not talking about this." What in the world? What did you make of this?
Yeah, first, we talked about Jordan, I think it was like 2 weeks ago, right?
So we did.
I want to say, like I actually, like, have no beef with her. Like, at this point, like, there's no beef. Like, I'm, you know, two consenting adults doing what,
I agree completely.
Adults do.
Yes.
The age difference, whatever. That doesn't matter. What I will say is just it appears that Bill Belichick, the fastball is gone. Okay. It's gone. All right. That's what I've decided after watching that clip, because that was sent, I don't know how many, 6-7 group chats that was in, right? Uh-huh. It was a lot of chats, a lot of people tagging you in the iMessage chat, like at Sam, how people do that. Like, got a lot of that.
Yep.
Just to make sure I saw it. The guy's just at a certain point, I think we all lose our fastball. And my perspective on this is that Bill Belichick's fastball is gone. It's toast. It's the way that Henry Rowan Gardner's went when he fell back on his arm in Rookie of the Year, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's just gone. And it's kind of sad, but also, that's what happens. And,
well, what's really was astonishing to me about it, and obviously, like, yes, there's probably too much leering interest in this, right? Whatever, he's a celebrity, she's a, you know, a beautiful young woman, whatever, she's whatever, and so, whatnot. But what's weird is that Bill Belichick has never had any problem, legendarily good at shutting down questions and not answering questions that he didn't. He never has needed help. Telling a reporter we're not talking about this. He does it maybe better than any, you know, with a death stare, better than any coach who has ever lived. I think that's what was so sort of shocking about this, that it's the sort of Bill Belichick needs help not answering this or something. That was what was, that was, it's just hard to recognize the guy.
That's what I'm saying. That's why the fastball is gone. Yeah, it's just like where did that man go? I mean,
Okay, here's the next question then. Do you believe that it, and this isn't, you're certainly not my area of expertise or really yours, so what the hell. Do you think this suggests that he will, does it have any bearing on his effectiveness as a head coach at the University of North Carolina? Or is this all just like, whatever, it's fine. He's still going to be able to good football coach. He's going to get players. He's going to coach them up, and he's going to be good at the University of North Carolina. And all this is just stuff around the margins that doesn't matter at all.
I mean, I would lean towards the fact that like, it would be just like, doesn't matter at all. At the same time, I don't know how, I mean, this is everywhere, right? Like we're talking about it. Everyone's talking about it.
Yes.
If you're in the recruiting business, right? And you can't just like draft people and make them come play for you because you're not in the NFL, you're in the NCAA.
Right.
I mean, like, people want to play for Bill Belichick because he's, you know, the greatest football coach ever. And he's going to make sure you're ready for the next level if you think you can do that.
Right.
At the same time, how do you respect who's, you know, been known to be a totalitarian dictator on his football team, right? Like, famously cut fan favorites, all that, right? Not sentimental at all. And now all of a sudden we have him looking around like a lost puppy during an interview, you know, like, I don't know. That just seems like not the guy that I would want be out there recruiting if I were the North Carolina boosters right now.
Right. All right. All right. Enough of that. Are you enjoying the hockey, Sam?
I am enjoying the hockey. It is fascinating that the Leafs may be the Leafs and just, you know,
people may not know this. The Leafs, What they have some in potential closeout games. I don't know the record now. Are they 1-10 in their last closeout games? When they had opportunity to win a series, they are legendarily bad, and they continue to be bad. They were up 3-0 on the Ottawa Senators. They lose one game in overtime. It's like, that's fine. They'll be the Leafs. They'll win the. So then they lose. They get crushed last night. Really shut out last night. And now it's going back to Ottawa for game 6. All of Toronto is, I'm sure, in a fetal position at this point. It's just kind of incredible. Does your heart?
Go ahead. Yeah, my heart kind of like when they lost that overtime, because they had a 4-minute double minor power play with like some of the best players on the world on their first power play unit. And I thought to myself, oh, surely they'll get a goal here. And then they didn't get the goal. And I'm like, oh, no. Oh, no. And then Ottawa scored, and it was a thrilling overtime. That was some of the best hockey I've watched in years and years and years. And then last night I had the game on mute, and it was just ugly. And it was like, what are we doing here?
This is a rare moment, by the way. George is a hockey fan. I'm a hockey fan, and you're a hockey fan. This is a rare moment in Memphis Sports Talk Radio. We got three people who actually pay attention to hockey on the same time, but I won't belabor it. You have opinion on the Leafs, George?
Is this not just what they do at this point?
It seems to be what they do.
They collect all the talent except between the pipes.
Yeah. So there we go. All right. Sam, I knew we aren't going to talk too much about XAI, but since you and I last spoke, there was the public meeting at Fairleigh High last Friday, where people gathered to express their frustration about XAI, lack of transparency, all of this, as there is this question of whether, I guess, there will be permits, will be issued so that XAI can still use these, can make 15 of the 30 gas turbines permanent. What was the scene there? Was it measured and thoughtful discourse? What was the scene? I'm sure it was some of those.
It was not measured. I think there was a lot of thought. I don't want to belittle the intellectual capacity here of anyone. No. I think there was a lot of passion, right? So what was happening, and this is unusual because for people who don't know, air emissions permits are essentially you apply to the, in Shelby County, in Shelby County, you apply to the Shelby County Health Department to essentially be able to release hazardous chemicals as part of industrial work. Okay, that's how this works. And typically there isn't a public hearing for this. It's just you apply, there is a public notice period where you write in a comment. Right. You know, back in the day you would literally do this by mail, now you can do it online.
Yeah.
But because of the high profile nature of this project, there was a public hearing, and essentially it was a raucous affair. Brent Mayo, who's the site leader of XAI in Memphis, came, he read a statement at the beginning of the meeting. That essentially pledged to use emissions technology that cuts certain amounts of chemicals that are emitted by these turbines by quite a bit. It's called selective catalytic reduction technology. Put it into ChatGPT, put it into Grok, see what it tells you. It's essentially a very fancy cigarette filter for natural gas turbines, if people want to think about it that way. He was booed incredibly. He could not be heard because of how passionate the crowd was. And after that, there was a lot of impassioned debate, not really debate, but impassioned comments from people who are talking about the legacy beyond XAI, which they believe is polluting the air and making the air worse. It is also about this legacy in the 38109 zip code, okay, of just we have a lot of polluters down there. We have the TVA combined cycle plant. We have its predecessor, the Allen fossil plant, which burned coal. Coal is not very clean burning. It's pretty bad for human health. Burned coal for a long time. We have the Valero refinery, which still operates to this day, right? And is a lot closer to the populations that are affected by XAI than XAI is. And you have Nucor Steel. You have all this stuff. And so this neighborhood and this community, and it wasn't just that community, but a good part of it was, that community was essentially venting decades of frustration of being an industrial part of the city. And that's
waste
what was being expressed.
Dumping ground. Yeah, a dumping ground for a lot of these. Yeah. And there was then there was frustration over the inability, or no one has felt like they've had much input on this entire process, right? And so this was finally So what is, like, who makes this decision, and what will, is it supposed to be based purely on, what is it, the decision supposed to be based on?
Yeah, I mean, that's a good question. I've asked the health department this question because this is the most watched air emissions permit application, maybe arguably in Memphis history, right?
Yeah.
As far as I'm aware, you know, as I understand it, and I'm going to say that with a caveat, as I understand it at this time, and please someone correct me, that this is supposed to be really largely based on, you know, the standards that are being followed by the company, et cetera. It's many times an administrative process, okay? The rather administrative process. In this case, I'm not certain. I mean, Justin J. Pearson, State Representative Justin J. Pearson, he's going to be having a rally outside the health department, which I'll be at in the next hour and 10 minutes, demanding they deny the permit. And so what I really will be fascinated by is if the health department does deny the permit, the Air Pollution Control Board, the XAI, could appeal to them, okay, and ask them to then approve the permit. But I would be curious if the permit is granted, which I likely would be, how do people feel about that? Do they feel led on by this entire process? That would be a really interesting scenario.
Fascinating to follow. Before we let you go, Sam, I gather, and the truth of the matter is I just saw your text about this, but someone had tipped me off that you may be headed to Frame Corner yourself in the near future, or should be, because you... enthusiastic, sort of just barely beginning golfer in some ways that you are, you had your first hole in one. That's fantastic.
Yeah, thank you.
Where was it? What was the experience? Take me through it.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, like, I'm on cloud nine. Like, the day that means not going to get a lot of work out of me today, to be quite honest. Sorry, Jane, my editor, if you're listening. It was hole seven, which, if people have played Galloway, the links at Galloway, great city course, is over the water. It's sort of a signature hole of the course, the par three. The pin was in the way back today. It was about 163 yards. I hit an 8-iron. I, to be quite honest, because I'm, you know, a crazy man, didn't like the shot off the tee because I'm never satisfied with how I'm doing. And it hit about 15, 20 feet from the stick and rolled in. And yeah, it was amazing.
So what was your reaction?
I mean, it was actually pretty stone faced because, like,
like Rory after 18. You weren't collapsed on your knees weeping. No.
I'm such a psycho, and like, even though I'm not a good golfer, like, genuinely am not a good golfer. Like, I expect every shot I take to go in because I'm just a psycho. And so it was like a sense of relief, to be quite honest, that I won't live my whole life not having a hole in one. Like, that's how I really feel. Is like, okay, like, I've checked it off. Like, I won't be like this tortured 72-year-old golfer, like, bringing my broken body to the course trying to get one.
Well, congratulations. Yeah, that's fantastic. And that was just today. My God, what a day. What a signature day.
You.
All right, Sam, I appreciate it. Head on over to Frame
Corner. Thanks, Jeff.
Yeah.
All right, we'll do. Yeah. Bye-bye.
By the way, of course, Roy wasn't Roy after he didn't Roy after the playoff, where he fell on his knees in delirious joy. If you are thinking of getting a diamond ring, Robert Irwin is the place to go for your diamond engagement ring. I've told you this a million times. Jeffrey's told you this a million times. It's just like, seriously, go there. I go to the one right across from Novel on Perkins Extended. Find the one closest to you, but they'll walk you through what is an incredibly emotional process, and you will end up. They've got. Natural diamonds. They've got lab-grown diamonds. They can create anything you can possibly dream, and they have the meant-to-be guarantee. So you've got the assurance that comes with a 365-day, no-questions-asked return policy. It is Robert Irwin Jewelers. They get 5 locations, or check them out online at rijewelers.com. Back in a moment, Jeff Calkins Show, 92.9 FM, ESPN. So when the show wraps up, I'm headed out to Lausanne today, where I'm speaking to the middle schoolers. George, how do I look? How would you say I look with my O'Call sport coat here?
I think
pretty spiffy.
I think our boss, Brad Carson, had the best. I mean, just crisp.
Crisp.
Just crisp, I think, is a great way to put it.
But I'll be honest. I walk in. I'll be honest, you know.
Sharp.
I don't normally look. I don't dress up for the radio show. it's shocking. I don't shower for the radio show. But today, like, Ron Olson nearly fell over. So, like, I'm wearing a shirt from O'Call. I'm wearing a sport coat from O'Call. Honestly, it is such a pleasure. I never knew the pleasure of having clothes that were great. And it really is. Like, if you have the right sport coat or even just the right sport shirt or it is sort of transformative, honestly. And I learned that because I started to shop at O'Call. The clothes are beautiful. And then this particular sport coat that I have on, it is a brighter shade of blue than your sort of classic, you know, and it was not one that I would have picked out for myself. They said, you should try this. It's a little bolder. And I'm like, okay. And then I get so many compliments on it. And you don't last as long as they've lasted by, like, being steeped in the past. They push you to look your best. Honestly, they help you to look your best. Plus, the clothes are absolutely beautiful. So it's spring and summer over there. Get yourself a new sport coat this week. Get into O'Call. It seems like the music's wrapping up here, so we got to get out. We got to get out of here. What is coming up next, George?
Jason and John have Coach Norton Heard the Fourth live from Phoenix on the Nike Circuit at 1:25. CJ Hurt joins Jeffrey and myself at 3:35. David Cobb with Gabe at 5:00.
So sadly, it's been fun having you here, and I get you here tomorrow and the next day. We don't have Right of the Right trivia, though, tomorrow. I mean, that's the one downside of having
my name is not right.
No, it's not right. No.
And it's not fair.
Right
of
the Ruggiero trivia wouldn't have the same ring to it.
Doesn't
right?
roll off. Plus, I do host trivia, so it's kind of
that's
an
true.
Advantage.
Are you good at trivia?
No. Not great. Getting better.
We will be back tomorrow, though, and we'll talk to you then. For now, work is done.
Anyone who loves playing baseball or softball knows that one of the first steps in that journey is breaking in your first glove. It's where your love of the game began. Where does your child's baseball or softball journey begin? Go to playball.org to get started. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Every morning brings a fresh new energy.
This is Today with
Zoe. And no matter what the day holds, we come to the Today Show for all of it.
When things are tough, we talk about it. When there's something to figure out, we dig into it. And when there's joy, we celebrate it.
Because today is where it's all happening. We get the best start to every morning because we start it together.
Watch the Today Show with Savannah Guthrie and Craig Melvin weekdays at 7 a.m. on NBC.